to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get things going. It is Wednesday, April 10th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. This segment of Flames Talk brought to you by Hyundai. Well, Mr. Vickers, first of all, hello. How are you?
That was very formal.
Hello. Hello, Aaron Vickers.
This is Mr. Vickers.
Mr. Vickers
is my dad.
So I really hope that Dustin Wolf might starting to be winning some people over. I really poor grammar, but I think you get what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. I hope that Dustin Wolf is starting to win some people over. Not like he had to win over a lot of people. There's lots of Flames fans that are already excited and already believers, but there's also a segment of people within this Flames fan group and outside, people who aren't fans of the Flames, but there are some who are skeptical and worried about the size and the all of the things that go along with the Dustin Wolf package, and just believe that junior success, American League success, that doesn't mean NHL success. But I hope that what we're seeing here is starting to win some people over, because that was another quality start Tuesday on the road in San Jose, and a very different challenge for Wolf compared to even his last start, where he was inundated with 44 shots Thursday in Winnipeg and had to be engaged all night, and a lot of those 44 shots were of the dangerous variety, so he had to be really, really sharp and had to be on that or in that mindset the entire game. Whereas the second and third periods of Tuesday night's game in San Jose, like, the Sharks barely sniffed the offensive zone. And if it wasn't for Mackenzie Blackwood at the other side, that game's probably well over in regulation. That's how much the Flames controlled the final 40 minutes of that hockey game. And so Dustin had to be very, very sharp, but in a different way. He wasn't getting the constant shots and the constant work to keep himself sharp. He had to, as goalies do sometimes, had to keep himself sharp in other ways, which was a different challenge for him. And I thought got the job done, won the hockey game, allowed the two goals on 22 shots. That was another quality start for Dustin on Tuesday night.
Might have taken him back to his Everett days a little bit, because they played a staunchy defensive style where they wouldn't give up a lot. And you're right, this was almost a polar opposite to the Winnipeg game, where he had an NHL career-high 40 saves. He had to make just 13 in the second, third, and OT combined. And so in that, you can look at the workload and go, yeah, he didn't have to do much. But it's more the mental element of the game, that if you're Dustin Wolf and you're not seeing much action, yet the game is tied or you're down one and trying to claw your way back, you have to stay dialed to 100 when you're only getting a shot every 3 minutes or every 4 minutes or whatever it averages out to. And that in itself can be a challenge, because you can almost get lulled to sleep as a goalie when you're not constantly engaged with rushes or shots or traffic or opportunity. So yeah, very much a different test than the Winnipeg game, but a very important one for Dustin Wolf.
Yeah, and now 3-4-0 on this recall. So he was recalled in mid-March. I believe it was March 10th, March 11th is
somewhere
when he got
right
the
there.
Recall. And in his seven starts, he's 3-4, and that .910 save percentage remains.
You won't give him that three save over 20-minute relief performance credit, will you?
I think it's irrelevant. Like a relief
just throws
performance.
My stats out, because I've got .911 save percentage and .263 since that recall. I'm only giving you a hard time because of that. Because I have different numbers.
Just the
semantics coming at you.
By one percentage point.
Yep.
Or like 0.01 percentage point or whatever it is. The fact of the matter is, he's been very consistent. His numbers have been very consistent. And, you know, for a guy that's still figuring things out, now, I was talking to a couple of people earlier on Wednesday about this. You know, there's a belief inside the Flames organization that, you know, what we're seeing right now is still very much Dustin in the early stages of figuring out the NHL. And there are a number of steps to be taken by him to be fully figured out in the NHL when it comes to reading shots and the quickness that plays are made. Like, his hockey IQ is elite for a goaltender. That's one of the things we always hear from anybody who knows the position, is just how well he thinks the game, but he's going to just keep on learning more and more about how quick decisions and how quick plays are made at this level compared to the last two levels he was at, and continue to work his way through traffic, and how he's going to get better and better at seeing through traffic, because that is an area that, you know, his positioning and his hockey sense allows him to be mostly in good position. Like, I even noticed a couple of times on Tuesday night, because he's reading the play so well and because he is so well positioned, he's in the right spot for shots, but I think the adjustment to traffic is going to make it so that instead of that shot being stopped through traffic and it looks a little, I don't want to say shaky, but like a rebound gets popped out, or all of a sudden it doesn't get sucked in
completely.
He's
not putting pucks where he wants to.
That's the next step. Yeah. Because now, as you see through traffic, that extra, and this is Steinberg, the goalie expert, of course, but this is like that half centimeter or that half inch of going from well-positioned and reading the play well to now, because you've got a better view of it and you're working through the traffic a little bit better, that extra half centimeter to make it so you're in perfect position, and now all of a sudden the rebound's kicked out perfectly, or there is no rebound, or whatever the case may be. Those are just some of the things that I think we're talking about him working on as he continues to get more and more time in the NHL.
To me, one of the things I've noticed, and particularly fighting through traffic against the San Jose Sharks, is he's a little bit more upright, and he's a little, this is going to be a weird way to describe it, but he's a little bouncier in his stance to, you know, shift his weight to his right foot so he can peek over the right side, or bounce to his left a little bit to have that extra second look to see where the traffic is coming through higher up in the slot, where there might be a shooting lane, where there isn't. So I think he's doing a good job, and it's still going to be a work in progress. He's not going to have it solved after, you know, 12 starts in the NHL or wherever he's at. But the fact that you're starting to see things start to layer on top of each other in terms of him reading plays east-west, him, you know, better identifying the puck off releases of shooters, because the release shooters at the NHL level and shooters at the AHL level, yeah, there are certain AHL players that can shoot the puck really hard. But a lot of NHLers can disguise how they're releasing the puck in different places, whether it's at their hip or further forward. And Connor Bedard's a great example of a player that can release a puck from almost anywhere. Dustin Wolf, to me and to the eye test, and again, I'll liken myself just a hair above you in terms of goalie expert, but to me, he's showing the positive signs. I'm calling it right now.
Based on what evidence?
Well, I can tell which goalie's in the starter's net.
So
and which
can
one's
I
general.
Now.
Because I taught you.
You taught me how.
There you go. There you go.
The teacher can sometimes
the
be
student has become the master now. Is that what you're saying? Anyways, I'm
now
seeing
I am the master.
I'm seeing positive steps in terms of how Dustin Wolf prepares for a shot and how he's fighting through the traffic, which is going to be two of the biggest obstacles I think he has.
I'm just really, again, as he continues to figure things out, I'm curious to see how the numbers improve and how his comfort level improves and all that type of stuff. So it's going to be an interesting next little while. I think he's going to get at least a couple more starts here between now and the end of the regular season.
Well, we got five left?
Five left, yep. Two home, three road. They've got two more games left on this road trip.
Back to back?
Yeah, so I'm guessing they go Markstrom, L.A., and Wolf against Anaheim, just based on the way things have gone for the most part. The only time they've really deviated from alternating was when Markstrom picked up the win over Los Angeles. And then the other thing is, we are still talking about, as much as I think a lot of people don't like this, Markstrom is still the number one goalie. And Markstrom has earned being that number one goalie. So I think that factors into some of the decision-making here as well. But there's multiple starts left here for Dustin Wolf between now and the end of the regular season. And also take into account, they might want him to get one more game in the American League before he goes to join them for the Calder Cup playoffs. Remember, Flames finish on Thursday, and then I believe the Wranglers play Friday, Saturday to finish off the regular season in Abbotsford. So theoretically, Wolf could finish the season, play the final game of the regular season, hop on a quick flight, and then play the Saturday in Abbotsford against the Canucks and, you know, get that one last AHL regular season game in before he bounces into the postseason. That could very well be in the cards as well. There's more playing time this year for Wolf after the NHL. There's not for Markstrom. When the season is done, Markstrom's playing time is done. So I think that's also being factored into this conversation.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And yeah, just to verify, the Wranglers do play on the 19th and 20th, with the Flames ending their regular season schedule on the 18th. So it could be a case where, and coincidentally enough, that final game of the regular season is at home, but it's against the San Jose Sharks. Funny how that works again, back-to-back season, so on and so forth. But there is the element of, in theory, if you wanted, you can have Wolf start the final game of the regular season. Personally, I might lean Markstrom, but you could have Wolf do that, back up on the 19th, and then play again on the 20th for the Wranglers. Getting that, and I think it's important that he does get in one more game with the Wranglers prior to the start of the playoffs, just to get a feel again for that pace and tempo, because it is going to be a little bit different, but also refamiliarize with the team and the defense that you're working with.
And then there's the personal side of it. That was pretty neat to see Dustin pick up the win in San Jose. Obviously, we made lots about him going back to where he grew up, the rink that he grew up going to games at, all that type of stuff. And he joined his Flames talk postgame on Tuesday after picking up the win and talked about being able to win in front of his grandma. And you can just tell that that part specifically meant the world to Dustin. His grandma passed away, grandpa rather, passed away right before training camp or right around training camp. And as he says here, to play in front of his grandmother and knowing his grandfather was looking down, it was a pretty cool night for him.
She's been there every step of the way, and obviously wish my grandfather could have been here tonight, but I know he's watching on him, and you know what, hopefully this is one of many.
Yeah, it was just neat and a cool little side story to the whole thing. So good for Dustin, picks up the win, and I believe, is that not his first ever road win
it
in
is,
the
yes.
NHL? Yeah,
absolutely, and also snaps a personal four-game losing streak for him too, so good time to do it.
And it has to feel good, even just, he's played well, but the results haven't been there. And now he played well, and the results were there. So that's important, too. Here's what we got at 960-960 on the text line on Dustin Wolf. Wedley asks, out of Vickers and Pat, who's Obi-Wan and who's Anakin? Well, I don't think any of us are going to turn into the greatest villain in the galaxy.
I think it would be me. I think you're too nice.
You think you could turn into a...
I'm just saying, like, I don't know if you have it in you.
I definitely,
because you're a gentleman and a scholar, and I'm
or just
cranky
soft,
sometimes.
Or just so soft.
I wouldn't go soft.
Yeah, I would.
Charmin sponsorship coming through anytime now?
Yeah, I think if the shoe fits. This reads, what's nerdier, knowing a goalie by his pads or a Star Wars reference on the air? It's also a good question, because I know you probably didn't pick up the... Now I am the master, but that was a New Hope reference.
Definitely not a clue on my end. I knew it had to be something because you were very specific and deliberate with your delivery.
Well, it was a Darth Vader voice. It's when
that was your Darth Vader voice.
Well, and I'm not gonna do. I don't have a real Darth Vader voice. That's as close
no,
as I
no
can
wonder
go.
I didn't get it.
It was right when Obi-Wan and Darth Vader are their big showdown in A New Hope on the Death Star. No. Not a Star Wars guy?
Not really, to the point where I was going to ask you, which number is A New Hope?
Well, it's one or...
It's four.
It's one or four, depending on...
It's four. It's 100% four.
It is four.
And you know what?
Saga.
Yeah, I'm not getting any reference that isn't 4, 5, 6 of the original. It was four, five, six, right?
Yeah. You know what? It's that time of year, though.
Brad's got it right on the text line. Bunch of Jar Jars.
Hey now, Brad.
I get that reference,
you
but only because
it.
It's the worst character in the history of time.
This says, I think all the hate from your listeners towards Wolf stems from the way you talk about him as he's freaking God, a godsend, almost like you're being paid to say he's amazing and he's not even a proven NHL goalie.
You're getting paid?
I am. You're not.
I need a better agent.
No, I think that is a horrible read on your point and on your side. At no point, in fact, I think we've gotten very out of the way to say this guy looks like an elite goaltending prospect, and there is understandable excitement about him. But how many times, Vickers, have I said, this thing needs to take runway? We are not going to know whether or not Dustin Wolf is a number one NHL goalie by the end of this year. We are probably not going to definitively know until probably not the end of
you
next year.
You don't know until you know is your famous phrase on this.
Until
this point.
And until you see it like a few seasons in a row, you're not it. It's the one position in pro sports that I feel like until you've proven you can do it, you're not it. And, you know, I think we can have a pretty good idea that Connor Bedard's going to score 100 points in this league. And I think we have a pretty good idea that he's going to score 50 goals in this league. And that's not like a crazy projection. It's like, yeah, you know what? You can see it with your own eyes. It's so much different with this position. And it truly is. And I just feel like, yeah, I think there's a lot there. And I think this guy has the potential to be a cornerstone piece for the Flames. But I'm not going to be able to sit here and say that definitively for another 2 or 3 years until we see what an NHL workload going up against NHL shooters on a regular basis, how that translates to him.
And it's okay to be excited about his body of work in the WHL, in the AHL, because universally, any prospect site, any prospect analyst across the board has Wolf as a top four, top five goaltending prospect in the world. And that's just on the back of what he's been able to do. Two-time WHL Goalie of the Year, CHL Goalie of the Year, two-time AHL Goalie of the Year, AHL MVP, so on and so forth.
But, like, godsend, and like, that person is clearly a non-Flames fan, which I get. I just, it's a frustrating narrative sometimes, that's all. A couple of other things. Thought it was important to see the Flames go out and play well and dominate a very good team. Not a very good team, to go out and dominate a not very good team is what I meant to say. And I thought they were dominant, and they deserved the win, probably should have won in regulation. I think that was positive. And the other thing, I really like Matt Coronato again. Played a little less than 9 minutes. He was instrumental in the 2-1 goal. The way he protected the puck, the way that he stuck with that play, then the pass to Rasmus. Great, great follow-up from Anderson to score the goal. But I really liked how Coronato made that goal happen and had a number of opportunities. When he dials in that shot just a little bit more, and not to say, like, he's going to. He's got an elite shot. When he dials that in a little bit more, we're going to start to see more pucks going in. So I thought Coronato was a really big bright spot in 8 minutes and 55 seconds of ice time as well.
Yeah, and we've talked in the past about how this is experiment time or discovery time for the Calgary Flames. I'm all in favor of elevating his role, elevating his ice time, just to get a better read on him, maybe help build his confidence a little bit, because he's another player that's going to go back to the Wranglers and help them with a Calder Cup push. I'd be in favor of expanding his role just from a general, let's see what he's at right now. And of course, it goes back to what Ryan Huska said, though, is you have to earn the ice time. It doesn't matter your age, doesn't matter your situation. You're not just going to gift minutes, but I'd like to see more of Matt Coronato based on what you just said about how you felt his body of work was.
It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. And this segment of Flames Talk brought to you by Hyundai, the 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today. And very happy to welcome in our next guest as 2023 second round pick Etienne Morin has joined the Calgary Wranglers on an ATO. His junior season in Moncton has come to an end, and Morin is now going to join the Wranglers for the rest of the regular season into the playoffs. And Etienne joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Etienne, really appreciate the time today. How are we doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
How exciting is this? You've made your way to Calgary. You've joined the Wranglers. How excited are you here?
I'm really excited. I was kind of sad that my season was over, but I got a call and then back at it. Can play hockey and I'm around pro guys, so it's an honor for me to be here.
Yeah, that's got to be that has to be a pretty quick shift in your brain. Hey, like, you're upset about the season ending, and then you get the call and you get to keep playing hockey. How What was the reaction like when you heard that?
It was fun, actually. Like I just said, I can keep playing hockey, so I'm very excited. And yes, indeed, it was really fast. A lot of traveling in the past few days, but I wouldn't do to play hockey, so.
Well, take us through the last week or so. I guess it was 1 week ago when your season in Moncton came to an end. So take us through what has happened since then and how you made your way to Calgary. Tell us about the last week.
Yeah, so we got out, unfortunately, in four. This is not what we wanted, but and then I had to stay for two extra days in Moncton, so for meetings, goodbye meetings, and then I had to drive all the way back home, so that was an 11-hour drive for me, and then I was hopping on a plane 2 days later to come here in Calgary, and here I am now.
How are you feeling? That's a whirlwind of a week. How you feeling right now?
Now I'm feeling good, but the first practice was pretty hard, to be honest. So.
What have the Flames told you about joining the Wranglers? Kind of what do you understand in terms of what the plan is?
The plan is just for me to, my season was done early, so plan is for me to touch ice and being around pros and understanding their habits and what they do to make them pros.
What did you, I know it was probably a tough, as you said, a tough first practice, but what did you notice being out there with some of those guys?
It's very, the little details, how everything is perfect, communication, not a single pass is going to be missed. So like I just said, these guys are pros and they're there for a reason. So that just blew my mind, how everything is just perfect.
Do you had any time to hang out with and chat with Jacob Pelche?
Yes, I did today, actually.
Nice.
And the other two French guys, too. So, no, it's always fun coming here and knowing I have some people around me that I know. And he's a very energetic person, so it's fun to be around him.
Well, and I ask you about Pelche more so because of the Moncton connection. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting with you on the draft floor in June, and we were talking a little bit about it. Can you give us a little bit of an idea as to how big a deal Jacob is back in Moncton?
Yeah, he's pretty big. Years later, we still talk about him. And I remember when he played his first games and scored his first goals in the NHL, all the guys were talking about it in the bus. So he definitely has his name back in Moncton for sure.
Okay. We are chatting with Etienne Morin of the Calgary Wranglers. He'll be with the Wranglers for the rest of the season and the playoffs. Of course, his season ended last week with the Moncton Wildcats. Etienne, how did you feel about your season in Moncton from an individual standpoint?
A lot of points to work on, to be honest. I think it was a little bit more a tougher season for me offensively, but I did some great things. I focused a lot defensively and learned a lot about myself, and we learned more on loses, so I'm just going to learn from this season and build on from that for next season.
What are some of the things that you learned?
It's not always going to go your way. And you have to keep working all the time. So those are the two main things. But I learn a lot defensively, little details like boxing out early or little details like that. So I'd say these are the main points that I've learned this year.
You talked about the offensive numbers. Do you think because you had such a focus on improving the defensive game that maybe this season it took away a little bit from the offense?
Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I'm not going to use it as an excuse for me to not put as many numbers as I did the year before. So like I said, I'll just learn from it and I'll just make sure to be ready, more ready for next year.
You still feel like the offensive side of your game though is a big time strength?
Yeah, definitely, and I'll still keep growing that part of my game for sure this summer.
So we're chatting with Etienne Morin of the Calgary Wranglers now after a season in Moncton. What you talk about how it was a tough end of the year. You go out in four games. What can you learn about a playoff disappointment like that? What can you learn about not having the team success you were looking to have?
Nothing is for granted, and I guess it's just part of life. That's how it goes. It doesn't always go your way, and we did play really good games, even though we got out in four, and like I just said, it's not always going to go your way, so now it's in the past, and there's nothing really I can do about it, so I'll definitely rewatch some videos and some clips that of my game, but like I said, I'll just learn from it and be more ready for next year.
Is there anything specifically you're looking to gain from this time now with the Wranglers? Is it, you know, whether it comes from, you know, learning a little bit more about pro tendencies, or I'm just curious if there's anything specific you're looking to accomplish over the next number of weeks here?
You just said it. It's definitely going to be the pro habits, just how they are always in the gym, stretching before, stretching after. So I'm just really here for experience and understanding why these guys are pros. So definitely looking forward and getting some tips from these guys in the next few weeks.
What are your first impressions of being around the guys and being around a new team?
Well, it's nice to be back. I was here this summer, and I can see that it's a lot different now that the season has started and having to play off. All the guys are really dialed in, so they're here to work and not mess around. So that's what makes it a huge difference from this summer. But no, these are the little things that makes it different, basically. Yeah.
Have you been told if you're going to get into any game action, or is that still something we're waiting to find out?
It's still something we are waiting to find out, but I'm still going to work. I'm going to work as hard as possible for me to have my name up there.
Well, it's exciting to have you here, Etienne. I know it's been a crazy last week or so, so we'll let you go. Really appreciate the time, and good luck here with the Calgary Wranglers. It's awesome to have you in Calgary, and thanks so much for doing this today, hey?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That is Etienne Morin, and big ups to me. I said his name properly the entire time.
Good job.
I wasn't
expecting you to not.
Oh, I wasn't either, because there was no way I was going to make that mistake when he joined us on the draft floor in June. I don't know what was going through my brain. So I'll just be straight up frank with you. When, especially on the draft floor, there's a lot going on and everything's happening on the fly, right? You're reacting to who just got drafted, and you're paying attention to the draft board, and you're talking about where the Flames are coming up next. So there's a lot of things going on, and typically one of my better and one of my few strengths, I'm a decent multitasker. And so there's a lot going on, right? And so I feel comfortable in that environment. However, when you're multitasking, obviously not 100% of your brain power is going to the one task. So as you're doing an interview, it's all on the fly. Sean Kelso brings over Etienne. He sits down. You're chatting. Hey, we're live here on Sportsnet 960. And you're putting a headset on him and shaking his hand. And like, there's a lot going on. At some point, my brain went from Etienne Morin to Samuel Morin. And I started calling him Samuel. Samuel played about 30 NHL games Flyers. He was a first-round pick of the Flyers back in 2013. And so I just started calling him Samuel Morin at some point. And it wasn't until, thank God for multitasking, it wasn't until I checked the text line just for like a quick 2 seconds and just heard, why are you calling him Samuel? I'm like, no. And I had no idea I was doing it. Like, no, come on. And so I said it to him. I'm like, I am so sorry. Like, on the air, I am so sorry. And he's like, I didn't want to correct you. It's his first day in the NHL. He's, I don't want to correct you. I am so sorry.
He's not about to ruffle any feathers with Pat Steinberg.
Well, less about that. Just like, he's going to be a nice guy. Yeah. You'll figure it out later that you called me the wrong name. But I got it in time before the end of the interview. So least that's a positive. Etienne Morin, we'll see if he gets into any game action. We're expecting Sam Honzek and Jaden Lipinski of the Vancouver Giants to do the same thing. Lipinski will join the Wranglers on an ATO. Honzek doesn't need to. He's already under contract, so he won't. No worry about his entry-level deal. It's sliding to next year regardless. You know, because he's under contract, theoretically he could get into NHL games if they wanted him to between now and the end of the regular season. But Honzek and Lipinski, also from the same draft class, are going to join the Flames, rather join the Wranglers a little bit later on this week, we believe. So that's pretty exciting. More reasons to keep yourself dialed on the Calgary Wranglers, who play their final two home games this week. Thursday, Friday at the Dome against the Abbotsford Canucks. Those are the final two home games of the regular season. Get your tickets now. They're available at Ticketmaster. Then, of course, playoff hockey as well. After that, they'll finish next weekend in Abbotsford, and then we'll find out who they're playing in the postseason. By the way, Etienne Morin joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It is Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. Gents, Flames power play has been a problem all year long, and it would be one of the top reasons why they are where they are, and one of the top reasons why the playoffs are not going to happen for a second straight year. You know, if you were to go through the power rankings of things that ailed the Flames this year, I think for many the power play would be right at the very top. But over the last six games, that's a different story. Actually, it's a little bit more than that. I think, Willsy, they've got power play goals in seven of their last eight, but six straight games with at least one power play goal. They've got 10 goals on the man advantage during that six-game stretch. So it's less about what we're seeing. I'm curious as to how confident we are that this is something that can carry over into next season. In that, is this a team having power play success because the pressure's off and they're playing out the string? Or is this them figuring it out, and maybe this can be something they can build on starting at the beginning of next year?
Oh, that's a tough question to answer, Pat. Am I confident that the Flames can continue to have power play success in game two of their three-game road trip? Sure. As for next season, I mean, who knows? I don't expect them to struggle next season like they did this season. It's like they just kept spinning their tires in the power play and couldn't gain any confidence or momentum with it. And now they've got some. And will that carry over into the offseason? Maybe, maybe not. Will it carry over into next season? Maybe, maybe not. I have no idea. We don't even know who's going to be on the team next season. Or I guess, will Mark Savard still be coaching the power play next season? I guess that's a question that needs to be asked as well. But, you know, I am confident that they can continue to have success in the power play this season, simply because they're rolling right now. And for me, two things they've done to help them have success: pucks to the net and bodies to the net. As simple as that might sound, that's what's led to success for the Flames. And then there's a player who I think has really helped them turn their power play around, and that guy is Andrei Kuzmenko. He just adds a different element to the Flames' power play. That's where he's been at his best, in my opinion. And the way he can hold pucks, the plays he can make, he's got an elite shot. I think that combination has really brought a lot to the Flames' power play. And now that he's feeling better physically and probably emotionally as well, he's been a way more dangerous player. And the power play has kind of followed in his lead in a lot of ways, in my opinion. But will this translate into next season? I'm not going to lie, guys. I've got no idea.
I don't imagine that the Calgary Flames will score 1.75 power play goals per game next season, and that is just a ridiculous pace to even consider. But yes, it has been very improved over the course of the past 8 games or so, and just looking at your numbers there, Patrick, with 10 goals in the past 6 games, it's definitely been a bright spot for this team of late. But the fact still remains is, even despite that sudden surge, they're still sitting 26th in the NHL at a 17.5 success rate. I'm not a big believer as a whole, you know, as on the whole, as you know, you do something really good in March and April, and suddenly that automatically translates to September, October. I'm not a huge person that's like, oh, how is this set the table for you 6 months from now? Well, a lot of momentum dies over the course of the summer. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have video evidence now that you can go back to if you're the Calgary Flames and you have similar units going, okay, well, this is what made you successful last year, so why don't we just pick up from there in terms of how we want to orchestrate the power play, in terms of the personnel that we want to deploy on it. From that perspective, it gives you a starting point, but I don't know if necessarily a power play that's finally clicking after, you know, struggling to do so in 70-ish games of the season finally finds it. I don't know if that necessarily translates for me.
No, I don't either. And I would actually, I'm usually in my own head, I usually caution myself in situations like this about, you know, teams playing well down the stretch, getting some wins in their final 20 when they're clearly not making the playoffs, individual success, in this case, power play success. Usually I caution myself, okay, it's not quite the preseason, but it's almost the preseason. A lot of times this doesn't translate to back when things matter a lot. However, I am optimistic that part of what we're seeing, it's not like I think momentum's going to carry over into October and there's like, oh, remember what we did in April? It's not that. It's more, I think the player you mentioned, Wilsey, I think the fact that he is really starting to feel comfortable, he being Andre Kuzmenko, I think him starting to feel comfortable and him starting to get into a groove with how he fits on this power play, how he fits with the personnel on that number one unit, that's the area where I think they can pick up with a much better or in a much better spot to start next season, because a fully healthy Kuzmenko with training camp to start next year, I think that's a really enticing thing. And he is a power play specialist. Let's be honest. And that's not taken away with the offense he can bring at 5-on-5, but he is at his most dangerous on the power play. And go ask Canucks fans how things have looked on their power play since Kuzmenko hasn't been there. Now, I'm not saying it's a direct correlation, but you know, there's a lot of Canucks fans anyway who feel like, hey, they could really use Kuzmenko's creativity on their power play right now. So I just feel like because his comfort level, his health, and just how he's fitting on this number one power play unit is starting to become more apparent, I just wonder if that's something that can have them in a better place to start next season.
I think it can. He certainly has helped. Nazem Kadri has been good in every way, shape, and form all season long, including on the power play. He leads the team in power play goals and power play points. So assuming he picks up where he left off, that would be a good start. Jonathan Huberdeau has been a lot better in the second half of the season than he was in the first half of the season. He's second on the team in power play points. So if he picks up where he left off, then I think that's certainly going to help. And then two other guys, defensemen. We talked about getting pucks to the net and bodies to the net. Well, generally, it's not defensemen going to the net. It's them getting the puck to the net. Rasmus Anderson started to shoot it a lot more. That helps. And Neil Nurmanov has looked pretty good on the power play. He's kind of bounced back and forth between the first and second units. Mackenzie Weegar has done a great job in that first unit of late. But the fact that you know, he's joined the team and has been, I think, a pretty good fit on the power play, that'll help. And again, who knows? Maybe he's a top four guy for them. Maybe he's a power play guy for them. Maybe he's not next season. But right now, the power play is rolling, really, for the first time all year. And, you know, it's, for me, an 11-game sample size of good for the Flames right now. They scored 2 power play goals against the Sharks on Tuesday. They've now got 13 power play goals in their last 11 games. And for a team whose power play was maybe their biggest Achilles heel for most of the season, certainly a positive trend as we head down the stretch here.
It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek, Aaron, Pat on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Let's kind of keep on with a couple of guys that we just talked about. You mentioned Kadri. We talked a little bit about Kuzmenko. Guys, Kadri, Kuzmenko, and Pospisil. Is that a line that you are penciling in to start next season?
Maybe. Maybe not. Really depends on what they do with Connor Zeri. Whoever plays with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil tends to have success. So who do you want in that spot? Do you want Connor Zeri playing on left wing with those two guys? Or are you moving him to center? If you are, then sure. Leave Andre Kuzmenko right where he is, playing in a line where he's having more success playing with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil than he has had playing with anybody else. Now, a lot of his success has also come on the power play, as we just talked about, but that's been a really dangerous line at even strength for the Flames. But I also really like the Kadri and the Kids line. And for a fairly large sample size, half of the season, basically, you know, that line with Nazem Kadri between Connor Zeri and Martin Pospisil was, if not their best offensive line, then certainly one of their top two. And I would say consistently probably their most dangerous group prior to the Connor Zeri injury. So they could stick with this threesome that is working really well right now, but it's a fairly small sample size. So it's not something that I would be adamant about, but certainly is something that even if they didn't start next season with it, they could go to it.
Yeah, from my perspective, pencil. Yeah, sure. Pen, probably not, just because you want to have a little bit of that flexibility. And even when training camp gets back together in September, chances are seeing all three of those guys immediately thrown together probably isn't going to happen just by nature of how, you know, rosters are split and whatnot. But when you look at the makeup of that line, I think it's really effective just in terms of you can remove the names and just kind of identify what type of player each is, because you have a passer who can shoot in Kuzmenko, a shooter who can pass in Kadri, and in Pospisil, you've got a forechecker with speed and energy that can disrupt a lot, but still also has skill. So I think when you blend those elements together, you have an effective trio. And we've seen that obviously over the course of the duration that they've been put together. But to answer the question, I don't think you have to be married to the idea of reuniting that group when you get underway next season, but it's something to kind of tuck away in the back pocket.
And maybe that's a good way of putting it, tuck away in the back pocket. But guys, I don't know. Like the reason why I'm like, man, that might be something that you want to have as a big time possibility for next year is it's the only 5-on-5 line that has really unlocked Kuzmenko. He was whatever, had some flashes, but, and again, we don't know. He wasn't healthy.
Injury,
all that type
illness,
of stuff.
Yeah.
But it feels like as soon as he got put on the Kadri line in the St. Louis game, it's been a completely different story, and he's looked like a completely different player. And I just wonder with the pace that Kadri plays with, the way that he has elevated line mates all season long, and the pace and the physicality and the straight line nature that Pospisil plays with, I don't know. I just wonder if that's the exact right fit to unlock Kuzmenko. And I feel like you need the right center iceman and you need the right role, right situation to get the most out of Kuzmenko. I don't necessarily feel that way with Zeri to the same extent, because we've seen him play center and he's been decent down the middle. And we know that he can play the wing. And I feel like he could play the wing with a lot of different guys and still have a little more success. It feels like you need a little bit more of a specific spot for the way Kuzmenko plays. And that's why I wonder if that's something that they should really consider and give a lot of strong thought going forward to having those guys play together.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would argue that Connor Zeri hasn't been as impactful without Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil in his line. You guys don't agree with that?
I thought he was one of their best players against what was the last
Edmonton
game they played? Against Edmonton, yeah. And playing down the middle. I thought that was one of his best games of the season, playing down the middle.
Yeah, but for me, he was just a healthy scratch. He probably had a fire lit under him by Ryan Huska, making him a healthy scratch. So he was shot out of a cannon. And I agree with you. He was really good in the Battle of Alberta last Saturday night. But we're talking about a 1 or 2 game sample size here, guys. And it's not like he's, you know, filling up the score sheet right now. So I wouldn't say that Connor Zeri, a young player who should continue to get better, can't play without Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil, but I would just argue that he's been better with those two guys. And that goes back to where I started. It doesn't seem to matter who you play with those two guys, Kadri and Pospisil. Those guys bring the best out of their winger. And I would argue the same about Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. So for me, it's more about duos. And I know a lot of coaches around the league now, it's more about, you know, finding two guys who work well together as opposed to a line that does. So for me, there are two combinations that I would not touch unless I had to if I was Ryan Huska. Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman, and then Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil. And for me, you can probably switch up who's playing the other wing on that line, and chances are that guy's going to have success because that's the track record with those two combinations.
For me, just going back to the Zary conversation, I wonder how much of what we saw to him was injury-related slash maybe a little bit of complacency, or I feel like I'm an NHL now, and that was the reason for the healthy scratch from Ryan Huska. But just looking at the roster, I can see Zary flourishing with Sharon Govich, for example, down the middle, if we want to use Sharon Govich as the other center, if we're moving Zary to the left. And I could see him certainly thriving with Michael Backlund, whereas when we look at where Kuzmenko might fit, we've had a kind of a difficult time trying to place him where I don't know if he thrives the same way with Michael Backlund. And we didn't really, I think it's universal to a degree, where we didn't essentially love the fit with Sharon Govich down the middle and Kuzmenko on the right. So I just think from my perspective, Zary's an easier player to slot elsewhere if you have something going with Kadri and Pospisil.
Nice to have options, right? Like,
absolutely.
You'd rather have them than not.
It's been difficult to find line combinations that fit all year long. Even when Lindholm was here, it was difficult to find some of those combinations. And so, you know, part of it is where does Huberdeau fit best? And that continues to be a little bit of a, there's been a lot of round hole square peg going on with figuring out exactly where Huberdeau fits best at 5-on-5. And is, as you mentioned, is Sharon Govich a center, Wilsey, or is Zary a center, or is somebody else coming in between now and the start of next season? There's a lot of things that play into it. I guess what I would say is it's just a nice thing to have on your back pocket because you know that's something that you've seen some success with. And I think one of the big things with Kuzmenko is he needs a driver as a center iceman. I don't think that was Sharon Govich. Sharon Govich is not a play driver, or at least has not shown that he is a play driver at this point, whereas Kadri is, and Elias Pettersson is and was last year when Kuzmenko essentially spent all season with him. That's the type of guy I think Kuzmenko needs to play with at 5-on-5 and then continue his success on the power play. That's why it's a really enticing option for me going forward.
So are you saying that you wouldn't play with Sean Monahan, who you've already signed?
Yeah, I've got him on a 4-year deal.
What about Elias Lindholm? Is he coming back?
Breaking news splitter I missed.
I'd play him. I'd play him with Sean Monahan all day. I don't know.
Well, he's not really a driver either. That's why I say that.
I don't know if he is honestly. I would play Sharon Govich with Monahan. I think there'd be a lot of intrigue there. I honestly have no idea if that's a real possibility. I just know Monahan's having a hell of a year. He is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. He has got his career back to where he's healthy enough to play and make an impact in the NHL. But, guys, he might stay in Winnipeg. I mean, it's been a really nice fit for him there. He might just stay with the Jets. He is allergic to playing to American teams.
I was going to say, or he tries to complete the set in Canada.
Yeah, off to Ottawa next. Keep him out of
Toronto.
Vancouver. Keep him out of Vancouver. Keep him out of Edmonton. That's just don't want him there. Anyway, that's for another time. Thank you, Wilsey. We will reconvene Thursday on a game day against the LA Kings. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. As we start to wrap things up this hour, thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers this hour as well. And this has been the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.